I guess I could chime in on that one. So to be hacked, I'll say in its simplest terms, is if someone intentionally attempts to make your data either unavailable, they might delete it, or in some way try to access it without your authorization. That is essentially what it is to be hacked in its simplest terms. The word is being thrown around a lot these days because, to be honest, there's a lot more compromise taking place. Hacking is not just for fun anymore, as I mentioned earlier. It really is big business. And we now have huge criminal enterprises which are based on hacking and compromising systems as a business. And that's all ransomware is in itself as well, too. It's engaging encryption for the sake of stealing money and having compromised a person's systems, making them unavailable, and then extorting money from them as part of that process. So hacking is big business. And there's no doubt that a lot more is taking place, and attackers are actually going straight towards the money these days. It's not just a matter of doing things and saying you'd have defaced a website and then moving on. They're compromising systems, leaving ransomware, demanding money, in some cases having double compromises where they encrypt your systems, demand money, and also threaten to disclose information online if you don't pay them money as well, too. So that's actually called double extortion. That's part of the process. And this is not just something that's happening on a whim. It's a big multi-billion dollar industry on a global scale. And between governments and businesses, they've all been subject to attack as well, too. We've heard one security professional say last week that within government, they've been attacked. Well, online platforms of the government of Barbados have been attacked and compromised at least 20 times within the last 4 to 5 years. And that's scary when you consider that the amount of data that government has on information on citizens and residents of Barbados is quite a lot. I think as part of this new digital push that the government has, it's important that they just not just consider putting in place new systems, but ensuring that the security that's necessary for them is also in place as well, too. The government itself does not have the best track record for security, and reality is that they don't have as much in terms of the systems and resources that is necessary to secure this new digital environment for a digital government that they want to have for citizens and residents here in Barbados, and that's key to the entire process. Hacking will continue no matter what, and there's no such thing as perfect security. As mentioned earlier, you could have any system that, once it goes online, is going to be subject to attack and compromise in some way, shape, or form. The best you can do is have adequate processes in place such that if you are attacked, you can detect it. If you are compromised, you could probably stop it before it gets too far. And then if you ever actually have an actual compromise, you have systems in place to recover your data and get back online in as short a period of time as possible.
Well, you just answered a number of, that wasn't the shortest answer for that, I don't believe. But you just answered a number of other questions that came in since the news in terms of the reason for the importance around this, the data, the number of hacks, and a lot of people asking those type of questions as well. The other question is, what else do they use our information when it's hacked or sold? Like somebody's buying, a company's buying my information. Besides using it to market to me, what else do they use the information for? That's a question, one of the questions asked.
I could probably chime in again here. You know, brokering data is big business as well, too. The reality is that when you go online and you actually browse and access certain sites, they themselves collect information about you in terms of what pages you visit, what items you look at, how long you spend on certain pages. And all that information is important because they then know that someone in Barbados, maybe in Christchurch, is interested in shoes. And we've seen an uptick in shoes browsing within the past month in Barbados. So something is happening there. And they could then sell this information to other companies to say, target people in Christchurch or in Barbados with selling shoes. And that's how they actually make money. And that's part of the business. There's no doubt about it. The reality is that with Facebook and other companies, people have been voluntarily providing all this information about themselves, because they felt as if it was a social platform, is one they could engage and meet people and catch up with your friends and also do business. And that goes back to part of the entire process that we're discussing here as well, too, in terms of WhatsApp and new privacy terms. And also the time with Facebook Business and WhatsApp for Business. They're looking to integrate Facebook and WhatsApp together into one big platform. As part of the process, they're catering for what's coming next, which is Facebook Pay. They're actually going to have a platform within Facebook to allow digital payments. And soon you actually could use WhatsApp as a basis for your transactions with actual business that's on Facebook. So now you have a platform, which is Facebook, that is the social people and the actual business themselves. You have Facebook Pay, which is the payment platform. And then you have WhatsApp, which is the actual messaging platform. So when you combine them all together, it's one big ecosystem for commerce, interaction, and also sales. And they're trying to make that this as seamless as possible for anyone that uses the system. And that's the ultimate goal. And that's why they want to have this new updated terms and conditions. You won't necessarily say explicitly this is what it's being used for. They're going to term those details in as general as possible, that it still fits within the parameters of what their intent is. And that's the bigger picture.
One of the things that you can say is part of our R&D process. So if a company wants to know what's the next big pivot, right? How do I continue to grow my company? Maybe have an option based on the information that they're collecting from users. If they say, hey, we wish we had this here in this particular location, we think that it helps them to create new products. So not necessarily selling your information, but giving them better insights of how we operate.
Right, Dwayne, I'm sure if you're finished, were you gone on mute?
Yeah, I was just saying it is.
I'm getting a bit of difficulty. All right, excellent. So I think that in looking at where the questions are coming in and y'all are answering the question, this is good. This is good in terms of finding out exactly what it is that people want to know and being able to provide that information. So I'm gonna wanna go over to some of the other questions that have been raised since and see if we can get them in. I think we've met the target of what we're looking at today to start this discussion. Some people are actually telling me they wanna know about data security, but they don't even know the questions to start to ask. So therefore that seems to be an issue as well. Let's take this next question. It says, good day, moderator and panelists. Based on my experience in IT, companies see IT as an expense and not a revenue earner, and hence spend as little as possible on their infrastructure and until it is too late. What has been your experience with working with these types of companies?
I guess I could probably speak again here. Dwayne, you want to go first, if anything?
Well, yeah, I'll just start because we build, solutions for many companies. It depends on the company, right? So there are companies that we work with that their product is specifically a software technology product. So they're going to invest heavily into that because that's what's going to generate revenue. If we're working with I'm just going to call a name, a hotel, an industry or something like that, they may not see a website or mobile application as being part of the business. The business is brick and mortar, right? Beds and that kind of stuff. So it depends on, which particular industry you're in. And this question, is in terms of data security and privacy is twofold. There's a consumer side, how I protect my emails, my phones and that kind of stuff. And then there's also the business side. Now, businesses have to recognize that if you don't invest up front, you're going to invest in the back end. So, because if you get a breach, you're going to, it's going to cost you way more on the back end. So it'd be better to invest up front, make sure that you have persons working for you. And like Ratna said, is to ask those questions. One of the things that we do is it starts from the architecture. So we don't approach a product and just start building a product unless we realize we ask all the necessary questions and begin to architect it. One line of defense is how we build the product. So, as we go about the digitalization process, we need to, there needs to be a lot of conversation about how you're going to build it. Because if a hacker hacks into part of the system and all he sees is birth dates, then there's nothing he can do with that. So you have to look at how you build a product. And that way, that is also another line of defense, not keeping all the information on one server and one database, and you're not normalizing it, you're not encrypting it. Essentially, you let somebody into your house and you put all your valuables right there next to the table. The hacker will come, he will take up all your gold and your fine china. What we do is we split it and we put it across different parts of the house and try to mask it so that if they do come in, they're not able to quickly and readily be able to access that information and your valuables.
If I may add to that, Corey, to add to Dwayne's point, a lot of it comes down to education as well. And with the COVID-19, there's a lot of acceleration in a lot of businesses that never thought about being online. Now they have to be online. And with things going digital, more and more people are getting aware of security and asking the questions, what is going to happen with my data? There is a general awareness now, something that was not there in the past. So hopefully the businesses will evolve along with that need and educate themselves and not look at IT just as a expense part of the organization, but something that adds value. And it's pretty much, it is about their brand and everything too, and about trust.
All right. The second part of that question is, sorry. Go ahead, Dwight.
No, I was going to answer that and say that in terms of how businesses tend to want to operate with new technology is that they want the technology, but they don't consider the security part of it. You can separate using new technology and not consider the security element of it. They're one and the same. There's a quote I always use from, I think it was an IT auditor from GM, where he said, there's no such thing as IT risk. It's all business risk. And that's the reality here. If you're going to be using any new system, any kind of technology, there is some kind of risk associated with it. If you're going to ride a bike and go down the street, there's some kind of risk associated with it as well, too. And you also have to be mindful of exactly what you do and not just consider that you have a black box, which is just a new system. You put it in place. It works perfect. It makes you money. Great. And then nothing more. There's a lot more that goes with it. And you have to ensure that exactly all that goes in and out of that system. Every person that interfaces with the data or the system itself has security in mind from the get-go, from day one. And not just consider it as just some kind of new technology that you have to use or some system that gives you an additional set of 10,000 new customers. And that's critical to the entire process. I think right. What happens a lot is that between businesses and also government as well, too, they buy the shiny new toy. They go to a workshop or some seminar somewhere and talk about some new solution that could enhance exactly what you know and not consider all that, not consider integration exactly. Also in terms of exactly all of the systems that it needs to work as part of the process. There's a lot of new technology that uses older systems, which are not secure. And that's another element of it all too, that businesses are going on board, purchasing new systems, and not looking under the wheels, and not kicking all the tires to make sure that all the elements that go into these new systems have the adequate security which is necessary. And that's really not enough. The next part of it is also your team, in terms of ensuring that the persons that you have that are technically capable of managing the system, also have the adequate security and oversight necessary to look at exactly what they do within these systems and not just have a system that's in place that being self-policed by the same persons that actually implemented it. Too often you find situations where a new system is put in place and security, as you mentioned, by someone mentioned, with a backdoor being put in place in a new system that no one went ahead and checked all login accounts within the system itself to make sure that persons that should not be in there are not in there. No one changed the default passwords on the system before it goes live. And these are critical things you have to think through as part of the process. No one goes and buy a big brand new car that has a new Mercedes, for example, that has worlds of technology and not consider, okay, how can I use all the new features that this car has? You consider all the features exactly in terms of what they have, but also by extension, what other risks come along with those features too. And that's how you have to see technology in these new systems. You have to think about exactly what comes along, both the good and the bad, in terms of what you acquire and what you use as part of your business.
Mm-hmm. All right, Andrew wanted to say something. Is it you covered?
Yes. So I just wanted to add to the discussion from Dwight in terms of how to get awareness from this company resisting the spend on the security aspect. And in the same way, how in business continuity planning, you look at what happens if I were to lose all access to systems, IT or otherwise, what would be the effort required to get back into normal operation? I think in that exercise, if the IT systems are recognized, then we'll look at the costs involved in, as you say, pay in the back end versus upfront. You look at the costs involved and then weigh that cost against. Let's put some measures in place to help reduce the actual possibility of me ending up in a state of disaster that comes via a breach or otherwise security related. So I think to take it up to the business level and take it away from the IT, I think will bring that awareness, because then there is a value in terms of cost of disruption and so on that will get you in the early parts of the discussion. Versus jump into a budget and jump into a solution, you will lose all attention at that point.
All right, I knew this would happen. We are galloping towards the end with a few minutes left. And so I am not even disheartened because, as I said, this is the beginning of the discussion and not necessarily the end. Sherianne, a lot of people are asking about what is the responsibility of businesses and government as we go more online to protect our data. And I think that you can give us probably in a nutshell the data protection bill, the data protection act, and the data privacy computer misuse act. Are these strong enough for all that we've talked about today in terms of the legislation? Is it strong enough for the times that we're in?
Thanks, Corey. So yes, I think that the Data Protection Act will, given the society that we are now living in, I think that it will go a long way in protecting us as citizens. What I will say, just to remind persons, that even though the Data Protection Act has been passed, it's not in force as yet. So and then we don't know the timeline of when the act will come into force. I'm hoping we can get some clarification on that too, especially with the passage now of this other piece of legislation, the Identity Management Bill. And as some of the panelists were saying previously, the Identity Management Bill is asking us for further information. It is also underpinned by the Data Protection Act, and the Data Protection Act is not in force as yet. So it is important that we as citizens get clarification soon on when that act will come into force. And also as well, the Data Protection Act, our Data Protection Act, was modeled after the European Union's General Data Protection Regulation, which from a global standpoint is seen as the strongest regulation of data protection to date. A lot of countries, including our own, have modeled their acts after the EU's GDPR for short. So I do think overall the Data Protection Act is pretty robust. It went through a lot of scrutiny. A lot of private sector associations were allowed to comment on the bill. There was a first draft in place. It went before a joint select committee. So it has faced a lot of scrutiny from all of the relevant sectors. So overall, I do think it is a pretty robust piece of legislation that would, whenever it comes into force, would protect many of our rights.
All right, these next few questions, and just take a little small answer on them, and we'll flesh them out when we come back to look at this topic again. I'm hoping to have many of you back on the line. This one says, with the increased prevalence of working remotely, have you guys seen increase in hacks locally? And is there anything we could do to secure the infrastructure of our networks? Now, we dealt with the second part of that. So the first part, are we seeing an increase of hacks locally? Anybody?
Okay. Do I? I could say yes. On a global scale, there's been a lot more attacks. There's no doubt that within Barbados, attacks have increased as well too.
Stop there. They got to come back to get the rest of that answer. The next core point is: do we have hackers here locally with the intelligence to hack us on? Do we have people here locally with the knowledge, the intelligence to protect us? Do we have expertise here locally?
Yes, of course, we're all here.
I think we have it on the line right now.
Exactly.
Yeah. I can ask this last question because I know we all are hungry, and I want to wish you a good lunch. This one says, good afternoon. What are cookies? And do they have any importance to this topic? And I can end on this cookie thing because they're hungry a little. Oh, you're hungry too. What are cookies and what can we say about them?
Dwayne, this is you for sure, right?
1 minute answer. who gonna take the cookie?
Dwayne, no answer. Well, I say basically cookies are like breadcrumbs, more or less. So breadcrumbs are from the from the nursery rhyme, the story that about leaving breadcrumbs to find exactly where you were before. So cookies allow you to have a trail of information that you go back to and use later on mm-hmm. on someone's computer, on their phone. That gives you details of who the person was and what you actually had with them in the past.
All right, let me take this opportunity to thank you, Dwayne. We'll talk later. Andrew Dixon, Sherry-Ann Walker, Dwight Robinson, and Ratna. I want to thank each and every one of you for coming and sharing freely. You have done national service today, so I salute you. And of course, to my producer, technical operator, DJ Dennis Johnson, and you, the listeners and the sponsors, Williams Industries Incorporated. This has been Brand Back Sunday, and I've been your host, Corey Lane. Do enjoy the rest of your afternoon.